That's where my cousin is going to school. We were just there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Or that's where he graduated anyways.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's nice.
I know
that
the concrete is.
It was a nice temperature, I'll say. It was like 85 the whole time.
Yeah, spring is nice down there.
Summer, probably not so much though.
It's horrible. It's so hot.
That's the trade-off.
High hundreds.
We've had a nice couple days up here, but it doesn't last. Oh, well.
High hundreds.
Sorry, like 110.
Terrible.
Many heavy hundreds. Welcome, Futile Podcast.
900 degrees.
Ian's talking.
900. Tonight we're going to talk about aliens. We got the whole crew together, the whole alien crew together to do aliens because that's proper. So I'm going to turn this over to you, Matt. This is going to be your podcast because Aliens is your movie.
Aliens
up and down
is my movie,
and so
I own it on Blu-ray.
Yes.
And
let me just say this. Compared to the Alien Blu-ray, I think the Aliens one is not as obviously, like, intensely, like, good-looking. It looks good, but I felt like some of it... It might just be that the original movie didn't have that good of cinematography or something, but, I mean, the model work is not as good, and or is a little too, like, I don't know. It's, like, too lit or something.
Huh.
It doesn't have, like... the dark subtleties that a lot of the other... That's just my take on the Blu-ray, but...
Okay. I think they did a really good job with the visuals. There's some of the, like, flying spaceship effects that show their age, but...
those are in the first one, too, though.
That's nothing to do with the Blu-ray.
For 1986.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it looks really good. It's sharp, it's crisp. The resolution's definitely there.
But this is, what would this be? This wasn't his third film, was it?
Second, after Terminator. Well, if you consider...
Piranha 2, the spawning.
Okay, sure.
Piranha 2, the spawning. And then Terminator. And then he gets to follow it up with this, which is a... And this is one of those cases of it's like a good sequel. It's something different with a few similarities. You don't necessarily have to have seen the first one.
Which is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like far enough removed in every sense of the word that it's like people would have had the time to be really looking forward to it, I would think. As opposed to now, when usually they just churn the sequels out of these franchise things.
Yeah, they make one, and then they make two more if it did well.
Yeah, and in the next, like, 10 years. Yeah.
No, it was supposed to be a trilogy.
Yeah, and it was supposed to be done, like, factory fast,
right.
As opposed to taking your time.
Yeah.
I mean, the only person I think is getting away with doing that now is Nolan, with the Batman movies. Like, he's making a movie between each one of those, getting a break. On some level. I mean, I doubt he's getting any actual break, but at least creatively he's getting to do something else.
Yeah. Even though he ended up doing the third one, but he was hesitant for a long time to do the third one.
Well, I mean, you gotta wait till you have the story, and I mean, obviously, I'm sure there are a lot of forces doing, like, okay, have the story now.
Yeah.
Have the story.
A couple interviews are like, well, why are you hesitant to do the third one? I was like, well, I've rarely seen very many third movies of a trilogy that were actually good, so...
Yeah. But, so this is just one of those, I mean, few sequels that lives up to being as good and just coming so far later and that, yeah, it's good stuff. So, I'm going to turn it over to you, like I said. As much as you can about this movie. You watch this movie all the time. You could probably quote the entire movie.
Oh, man, that would be fun.
But I mean, maybe
you have to do it alone.
Give us your story in relation to this movie. Like, do you remember the first time you saw it, and kind of how you fell in love with it, or
what the circumstances were? I don't remember why I was looking forward to it so much, but I had rented it with my dad, and we were planning on watching it once it got dark.
Yeah, nice.
To set the mood. And I remember I was jerking around in the front yard with the hose that evening when...
Jerking your hose?
A group of neighbor kids walked by.
You've told me this story. This is what forms Matt's character.
This is the foundation of Matt, right?
And with these circumstances, I can't believe I have fond memories of this movie.
Tell it.
Okay, so... One of the kids was Brennan. Brennan Burke Martin from Remote Control Grandpa.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they were walking down the street, and it was a hot summer day, and I was like, oh, neighbor kids, I'll squirt them with a hose. They'll enjoy this. It'll be refreshing. I'm not running up to them and like...
You're just giving them a spritz. Yeah. A spritz from like 30 feet
so
away.
So I do this and they look at me like I'm
an alien.
A mental patient.
Like a bunch of jerk arcade kids who don't have a sense of humor.
Yeah.
Hey.
You have a sense of humor. You don't fall in that category, do you?
I'm from Arcadia.
You would have liked
but
my
you don't
hose.
Fall
in
that category. Yeah.
I'm from the newer kids.
So they got upset, and my parents found out, and my punishment was to not be able to watch the movie. And I was devastated.
Yeah, so the first time you were gonna watch it, you didn't get to watch. So it's the delay. It was the delayed thing.
So anyway, I ended up watching it alone, like the next day or something. No. My dad was at work, so and I had to. I was petrified during this movie. I had to turn it off during the scene where they find out where the colonists are and they go in.
Yeah.
And before they even find the lady that's alive.
Yeah. Well, wait a minute now.
Yeah,
but this time you were watching it on your own, were you sneak watching it? Because technically your punishment was still not to get to see it.
No, they let me watch it at that point, yeah.
What is this movie rated?
It's R.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh
when
my
your
gosh,
parents would
you
not let me watch
10?
An R-rated movie at
somewhere.
10.
Yeah.
Maybe I would. No, maybe I would.
My parents
12,
didn't
13.
Let me watch a PG-13 movie till I was like 14 17. Or 15.
Yeah.
My parents took me to the theater to see Total Recall.
Awesome.
So I think I win. Which means really I lose. I mean, childhood never dies when it's malformed in such a way. So you had to turn it off. Like it wasn't cover your eyes. Like I for years when I was a little kid, couldn't watch that heart pull out scene in Temple of Doom. I always had this kind of like,
oh
no, look
gosh,
away.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
Did you just muddled through, you powered through it, you like did some deep breaths and then hit play again? And
yeah, I think I paused it quite a bit.
Really?
Yeah, it was
that
one scene.
Paused
that really...
it? I would have fast forwarded it.
Yeah.
And like, forget this. No way.
Alien 1 was the first R-rated movie I ever saw, though. I remember that.
So then you had context for anticipating seeing the sequel, then.
Yeah.
So it wasn't out of context. That's cool. And you just dug it. It just really affected you. Was it the fear and the adrenaline thing, and you wanted to get that feeling back? Like a lot of people that are big like horror movie junkies, like
that was probably it. All the cool sci-fi stuff in this movie.
Yeah, it is that
so
too.
Awesome. Every single thing, all the designs for the weapons and the vehicles, all the ships and everything are just so cool.
Yeah,
the APC that they drive around in,
it's all very unique for its time too.
Man. Yeah,
and everything is referenced.
I had that
toy. All the like. Oh, I mean, there's kind of a back and forth thing with other cultures, you know, just like with Westerns and everything else, but it's like all of the, like, I mean, this is 86, so almost every anime that really used any of that stuff was probably referencing aliens. There was a few, I'm sure, before that, some space shows, you know, Gundam and things like that in the 70s and early 80s, where there's maybe some back and forth, and you'd imagine maybe Cameron might have been aware of some of that cool sci-fi stuff or some of the awesome design work that a lot of those like animation guys were doing. But definitely, yeah, it fits a niche, and it's one of those cases where there's a lot of terrible movies with terrible visual effects and boring stories that fall into this category of like out on some dusty colony where there's a couple marines and blah blah blah, but this is like the one that's good. And it sucks there aren't like more like this in this time period when, you know, building sets and designing vehicles and all this real stuff.
Yeah. It's so fast-paced. Everything, there's no lollygagging at all. They're always like, we're in shit and we need to figure this out right now. And then next and next and next.
Yeah. It has the slow moments, but the slow moments are judicious. They do a little with the character and they kind of give you that necessary like chance for your heart to stop for a minute, to slow for a minute, and then it's like the thing with her, basically the stuff with her and Newt once they're there is just a couple of, you know, like 20 second scenes or something between something crazy happening.
Although the music kind of keeps you guessing sometimes, like,
yeah,
it'll be like a nice moment with, you know, like, oh, Newt, whatever, but the music's like,
yeah. And a lot of dunt.
Yeah.
Yeah. it ratchets the action up pretty well, and it slowly kind of... I mean, it follows a lot of good horror formula, and it follows like a lot of good action formula, and it just blends the two. When I was a kid, I liked this movie a lot more than the first one, because I was always one of those kids that didn't like horror movies, but liked them. Like, I was always like a challenge for me to watch them. But like, whenever there was one with like humor, or one with like more action in it, then I could enjoy it more and be less scared, because it was like the characters were more proactive. When it's just people getting murdered and being confused and misery, that stuff always bothers me the most, you know, because it's like just too disturbing to watch the, you know. But I really the first time I ever saw Aliens, I think, was on TV, and it wasn't from the beginning, it was about a third of the way in, and it was just this like realization, like, this exists, this other movie that is in the same world as that other one with the alien, except there's more, and like now they're fighting back, and it's like the natural progression of what you would do with this kind of story. I mean, I'd hate to think in this climate now, if a movie like Alien had come out 5, 10 years ago, they'd just be rebooting, remaking it, and it would just fit the formula of...
like all the Saw movies.
Like, yeah, or like a lot of that stuff. I mean, there are a few things in this that are directly out of the first one in terms of like the same sort of stuff. Like, basically the ending with her... and a bunch of noise and a computer talking and stuff. I mean, there's superficial elements that are so similar. I mean, and then obviously the very end is the same, with her having to space the the only way to really be sure is to launch it into space. Right. But it's a bigger alien, and the encounter is a completely different encounter. He finds a way with the suit to have it be like a physical, you know, woman on woman, female empowerment, knockdown, drag out fight, and that's cool, because it gives you something different. Like, you can just see all these moments when they're staging action sequences, but they're finding ways to make them something different, something unique in terms of the kind of problems that they have to sort through or deal with. And in that sense, yeah. Cameron just can write a solid screenplay. As long as his villains are like single-minded monsters or robots, then he generally is pretty good. Billy Zane in Titanic, one-dimensional villain.
Billy Zane was the villain, not
so great.
Get into the boat.
I don't remember him being a villain.
Well, I feel like I remember him. There's like a scene where he's like pulling babies out of a lifeboat or something,
like
shooting people so that he can get his spot.
They had good pacing. They did have that one like slow suspenseful scene where they're locked in the room with the face sucker, like in the first one.
Yeah.
They're like, oh my god, where'd the face sucker go? And they're like,
well, that was still an action sequence, though. It was just a different way to stage another action sequence.
Yeah. It was just similar to the first scene that they had in that movie, in
Alien. Yeah. It definitely was.
Sucker.
It was. There was an element of similarity to it.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, all the problem solving that he does in this, and the way the story is structured is pretty much flawless. There's a few places where you can be like, well, why is the elevator there? It shouldn't be, you know, like points that we brought up when we were watching it.
Yeah, why are they shooting their guns when they just got a direct order to use
them? Yeah, why didn't he tell them why they shouldn't shoot their guns?
Why didn't he tell them why?
Yeah, that always has bothered me.
You can't fire, period.
Yeah. That's always bothered. I think that's one of those character things where it's like the guy is overcompensating for his like his inexperience by just trying to be like, oh no, if I'm in command, you just have to listen to me because I'm the one in command. You follow an order.
Right.
I don't have to justify it. And him and ha. And so there's a rationalization there for that, but
he was pretty useless.
They did a good job with Hicks. Being
I guess he didn't martyr himself. That's sort of redemptive.
They did. And, I mean, Hicks' character is really well fleshed out, like you guys talked about. The beginning, you see him kind of being quiet. He's a little malcontentious like the rest of them, but for the most part, he doesn't blow up about anything. He sleeps during the drop because he's just so cool about
everything.
He's frosty.
Hicks,
the vague love interest. Which is good. They didn't go too far with that. They didn't like, you know, have to work in some hammy love thing necessarily. They just worked in a little bit of a like
a
relationship
okay
or something.
In the special edition, they really
there's just no time for that
stuff. Are you serious?
Dwayne. Ellen.
Yeah.
Don't be gone long, Ellen.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's all you need. That's all you need. But no, I mean, just thinking like the scene when they are in locked in the hospital room, mm-hmm. and it's timed such that Hicks is distracted because he's dealing with Bishop getting the APC or whatever to come down.
The second drop ship.
And that's why, you know, Paul Reiser can turn off the thing. And so that's like a case of like, well, why wouldn't he pay attention? It's like everything is serving, everything is working. Like all the background mm-hmm. activity, because there's usually more than one level. It's not really a movie that has an A and a B story, but it has like multiple things happening at once in multiple locations for the most part. And it's all staged in such a way that like it all flows together. And that, that's a real testament to just good screenwriting.
Yeah.
There's not like a lot of cut to this, then cut to that. It's just all happening at the same time and it interweaves correctly. Mm-hmm. And then like the way that he solves the problem of, well, okay, how does she eventually alert them? Well, she uses the lighter and then the sprinkler mm-hmm. system. And then that creates a whole nother visual component to the scene with the wetness and the uh-huh. water and her face is all wet and there's all screaming in the rain and all that kind of stuff. And so that's cool.
That's good.
I mean,
yeah.
just when I look at this at a movie like this and I analyze it from all those points, it fits. Almost all character behavior makes sense. Oh God, I feel like there's one thing in there that doesn't though. Maybe that was Super 8 earlier today when I was watching that.
Glistening, sweaty bones.
Well, no. She wakes up after having yet, like, the zillionth nightmare and just decides she's going to go. And you kind of get the justification in that. Because mm-hmm. Paul Reiser's given her the hard sell already. And so it's never like, why did she all of a sudden decide to go? I don't know. I think everything, yeah. All the
why did she decide to get out of the APC? Why did she decide to go on the dropship from the Sulaco?
Yeah, they just kind of bring her. That is the one thing that is kind of strange.
They specifically told her, you won't have to go in with the troops.
Yeah, and then
so
she essentially
why
does.
Did she go down, in with the troops?
And they all do. That's probably the biggest caveat in the movie is that it's this huge. I mean, you get a sense that the ship is giant, the Sulaco.
Yeah,
but
right?
There's only like 10 people on it, and they all go down there.
Yeah, right? Why isn't anybody left on the ship?
The rest of the ship is
like
contains bullets.
Like Cookie. There's no cook or anything. Like, where's the chef? The chef doesn't stay up there, and also, like, he's like Ryback from Under Siege.
The worst part of the movie for me was when Newt slips. And she's hanging on to holding her body with one hand and her stupid plastic doll head with the other one.
Yeah.
And then she slips
out of the jacket.
Yeah.
That
Come
was
on.
So dumb. It was totally contrived for that big water wheel. What the hell was that wheel?
Through the vent. Wheel that's like placed right under the ladder.
That's not how it would be.
Yeah, I mean it's got to have a handful of its caveat things to I guess you write off the fact that Hudson is so frazzled. He does a good job eventually to secure their floor, but he doesn't, unlike just like Khan in Star Trek 2, he doesn't think three-dimensionally. He doesn't consider above and below them.
Mm-hmm.
So they just come right in they assault them from the top. And there's no reason that's it. I just feel like the way Hudson goes out is kind of crappy. You don't really ever, I mean, you see him pulled down, but you never really.
Bothers me.
Yeah.
It bothers me when they get like dragged off to be cocooned or something instead of just like acid or
knowing
murder
that they're
right
dead.
There.
Yeah.
Like, now they're gonna like live this little torturous existence and they can't help them.
Hello!
Hey. What's up?
He's doing okay. We're just talking about some aliens.
Talking about what?
Talking about aliens, and we started getting to the part where we're just ripping it apart. I did a good Matt and I did a good job of talking about how like it's essentially like a flawless screenplay, except that it, like a lot of horror movie things, it does bring a lot of like towards the end there are a handful of like why did the little girl act so dumb? And I think you can write a lot of that off to just kids being panicked or scared or whatever.
The only character that bothered me the one that bothered me the most was Paul Reiser's character.
Yeah, well, you're supposed to be
bothered.
The first thing he said, he's like, oh, I work for the company, don't let that fool you. I'm an okay guy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, well, anytime someone describes themselves as that, it's over.
Right.
But then he's like, basically turns into a murderer, like willing to kill these people for a couple million dollars, which doesn't seem like a lot
percentage
in the future. like
it's percentage.
Like
this a 1986 future
plantation
that was a lot of
is
money.
Like a multi-$1 million. That doesn't seem like a lot at all. It seems like
or people remember it's the future where the smoking is in and dot matrix printers are
and
back
then,
and Reeboks are all the rage.
Yeah, here's the thing. He's like he is going down the corridors and locking the doors behind him. To me, like, what's the strategy behind that? You don't have any guns.
I think he's thinking he'll make it to Bishop and then just say no one else made it and then get the hell out of there. And he knows he can file a report with the, you know, whoever.
Yeah.
No, I mean, throughout the series, the idea of the evil megacorp was kind of always hinted at, even in the first one. And so it is kind of a faceless whatever, and they do actually directly address it in this movie, and Paul Reiser is kind of an example of a Cameron one-dimensional villain to a degree. But for a while there, he actually does his thing. And until it gets to a certain level of, like, direness, he's sort of part of the solution. You know, he can see that Ripley's more competent than Gorman, and so he's, like, you know, on her side when it comes to things and stuff. So I get the impression that it's like he knows he's going to try to get, like, a sample of this, and he feels that, like, if he just kind of manipulates everybody the right way, he doesn't want anyone to die, he doesn't want anything. But then, yeah, he does turn into an absolute, you know, slime bucket right there at the end, and it's time for him to go. Which I'm okay with, only because the Bishop character is there for you to be uncertain of and untrustworthy of based on what happened with Kane. You're on kind of Ripley's side.
Well,
it seems so weird the whole time.
Yeah, and other scenes they pull in when he's, like, in the thing dissecting the alien, and he comes in and he's like, do you need anything else? And he just, like, turns around and, like, stares at him for a minute. Like,
They basically, like, make you think that he's going to be a problem later. But then he's just not. And that's kind of refreshing. I like that when the character that's kind of been marginalized and that your hero doesn't trust or whatever finally realizes, you know what, they can trust this person, they're
first
okay.
First time I saw this movie, I was definitely happy about that.
Yeah.
I was like, good, I didn't want to see him be...
Exactly, because he'd been like a pretty trustworthy fellow, and it's always annoying when the trustworthy guy at the last minute, just for writing convenience, is like, haha, I'm a bad guy now, just because we need another fight at the end or something. Yeah, this is a relentless movie when it comes to the fights. It's basically like boom, boom, boom. And then they get up on the ship and have that last one.
They only had six alien suits for the whole movie.
That sounds about right.
Dozens of them.
Yeah, they make it work. A lot of these guys just doing backflips and silhouette and stuff after they get shot at.
Yeah. I think the only shot where you see all the suits is when they look up the vent and they all, like, crawl at you.
Yeah, there's a couple times you see three or four, but yeah, they are pretty... I felt like, I don't know if this ever happened, like, there was talk back when Lucas was doing his special editions of Star Wars that Cameron wanted to do one where, like, maybe he could add more aliens or something in the background.
So they didn't.
Yeah. It works. It's got proper scale. It's so much better. Honestly, we should talk about the director's cut. I just think the theatrical is significantly better. One, it's shorter because it doesn't have the extra stuff the director's cut has.
And it's long enough as it is.
And yeah, it is a long movie already. But you don't need... And it's a detriment, in my opinion, to see the colony before things go wrong.
Yeah.
I so prefer they arrive and it's a ghost town and you can get everything that's gone badly. And at the same time, it doesn't...
I was wondering why I didn't see those scenes. I was like, I thought that was a part with...
Well, yeah, they show the people, like, making jokes.
And
they show
the
little kid with his remote control
family,
and all,
like,
that. Yeah. Exactly. It also is
a
timing problem, too. It's tough to figure out, like, well, wait a minute. It's like they cut to it after the Ripley stuff. And then they cut back to Ripley, and it's like, everything just went, tits up out there. And I'm like, really? Yep, just a few minutes ago, I guess. As opposed to now, the way it reads in this is it's like, well, we haven't heard from him for a while, so I guess we're getting kind of scared. We're going to go check it out. And then they cut everything in the theatrical one out about Ripley being a mother and having a kid.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like... The maternal.
To know that in the theatrical.
They could have maybe done a little of it, but it's almost too hand-holdy.
Yeah.
With the meat.
Wait, really? There wasn't anything at the very beginning about she wasn't supposed to be there for the 11th birthday? Oh, that's all special.
That's all special.
I remember, I argued with you guys before about this, and I was like, I don't think there was any mother stuff in the original at all. And there isn't. Which works in kind of a different way. Rather than it being like she's trying to, you know, reclaim her lost child, it's more like, because you get Ripley, you never know it from the first one. You never get it from the second one. You get more like that she's just got that intrinsic instinct, you know, maternal instinct, and you juxtapose it with the alien queen and everything else, and it's perfect. It really works really well. And I think it fits the character more consistently, because if you see the first alien, it never feels like she's like got a like husband and child back on Earth or anything. Yeah. She seems very... So it's more of a character growth thing in the second one. Which you get from her, too. You get her kind of being, like, cigarette burning all the way down, super nervous, super afraid of these creatures. Like, when she first sees the one giving birth over the thing, when she's in the APC. And then, that is the thing. That's the one... She does kind of change on a dime in a few places. Like, when she's talking to the Marines, she kind of gets sick of their shit. At first, she's really nervous and skittish about it. And then she's like, are you finished? And it's like, okay, whoa, I guess she, you know, kind of reclaimed that little bit of her character from the first movie, you know?
Yeah.
And then...
That's such a great line.
Yeah.
I hope you're right. I really do. Chilling.
Yeah. Yeah, she's good. And it's
it's the smartest thing to hope for, too, instead of fighting.
Yeah.
You're a jerk.
Yeah.
I don't think I want to go on this trip.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's a good one. I really like it. Anything else?
I don't know if I've ever paused it to see, but when Hudson goes down, he's not wearing combat boots. It looks like he's wearing dress shoes.
What?
Some kind of
like the actual shoes. Shot that they shot of just his legs getting pulled.
Yeah. Because
when he actually goes down, it's just his torso and you get the hand on his head.
Right. When it shows the... I don't know. It's
but
all I can
that
see in that shot.
That would be weird.
Why did
we skip
you can
to
see,
that chapter?
Yeah. Sure, let's
we
look it up.
We just resolve this.
For the listeners at home, we'll describe the feet on Hudson.
By the way, I was very impressed with this DVD menu.
Yeah,
isn't it pretty?
We all thought it was a video game.
Yeah.
Startup for a video game for sure. Did they ever actually do like a? Well, I mean, it's been riffed in so many sci-fi.
There was a video
games.
Game that was really close to this plot, where you're like in the same structure and running through
would
these
not surprise me.
Air ducts, and you have the flamethrower and the machine gun.
Oh, here's the only flaw in this menu: it doesn't give you a whole big chunk of scenes that you can scan through quickly.
They have that in the sci-fi gallery or museum up
it's
in Seattle.
Extreme.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
There's a sci-fi museum up in Seattle.
Okay, I'll just
skip
the chapter.
They have one of the aliens too. I don't know which one, but
that
one
would
of the
be
aliens.
Cool.
Yeah.
I should go check that out.
Shit's over, man.
He says shit's over. He says game time.
Game
they get
over.
Some chips.
Yeah. He's just
I love all the dialogue in this scene.
Yeah, it's good.
It's not reading right, man. It's reading right. Well, you're not reading it right. However it goes, I can't.
Yeah.
What was the thing about dropping the linens?
Stop agreeing to drop the linens.
First one she ever gets to kill.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You son of a bitch.
I think this is an example of someone.
Here we go.
Oh, wait, no.
Yeah, coming up soon here.
What is an example of what?
Of someone who's overshadowed by what they did later. That Paul Reiser guy.
Yeah.
We kept banking
here
this mad at
you.
It's going to be right here.
Come yeah, clearly,
you want some of this? Fuck you.
Paul Reiser was in like four movies.
Oh,
yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
He was in another one that's kind of interesting I'd like to check out. It's called
He's
The Tower.
Wearing dress shoes.
Are those dress shoes?
No, wait.
They look like dress shoes?
Yeah,
they?
those don't look like boots
those
going
look
all the way
straight.
Up to that.
They are.
They just
know.
Go up underneath his thing.
Okay, underneath
that.
That's
right
good.
There.
That one's good.
See?
Okay.
Yeah, you know what? They,
combat boots
they
have a little heel.
There's no way they would have screwed that up.
You know.
That's just
okay. Alright, well, alongside that,
mm-hmm.
Bill Paxton didn't bulk up for this movie at all. When you see him with his shirt, just his t-shirt on in, like, the mess hall,
I was thinking
there's no muscle on
like,
this Marine.
But that's because it's an 80s movie, and it's before every single male actor playing anything had to be, like, crazy, insane,
before you had
giant
Dwayne,
dude. DTRJ.
Yeah,
before DTRJ
got
on.
All of their arms were rather, like, mid-sized.
They look like, you know, like guys that are in the military back then or something.
On the other hand, if you are, like, super special ops guys, those guys are usually, like,
fit. Yeah, crazy. I get the impression that maybe these guys are not the super special crazy ones, but
maybe,
they're just like a good unit. Yeah.
A military operation, but contracted by the company though. Out, so maybe they're just.
They
like,
seem pretty talk backy for.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's kind of,
you know,
it's
the super
secret
program where they make you look like a potato couch or a couch potato, and then they just kind of fillet you in there, and then show all your rippling muscles under your.
The real Marines don't need steady cams to hold their guns.
No, but you were addressing something about Paul Reiser. You say overshadowed by.
I don't know. It's just one of those things. I think that's probably the weakest part for me is that I so see him as that Mad About You character.
Yeah.
That I can't, like.
It's tough to treat him.
There he is in his flannel and his little vest.
It's very. I mean, at the time it wouldn't have been, but I mean, I'm pretty sure he was a comedian, and so. At the time, probably, and so it was just like, well, yeah, you're a comedian and an actor, and you get the role right, and we'll cast you. And I think he's good in it. I think he does a pretty solid performance. It's just like you said, he went on to do a sitcom called My Two Dads, and then after that to kind of create and be on the sitcom called, you know, Mad About You for forever, and then write some books and kind of fall in this sort of strange
category. To be, I don't know if this is a flaw in his acting or if it was just edited weird, where Ripley is like, basically gives him the shit like, you don't realize what he's done! And he goes from being like, oh, blah, 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 to like a super extreme, like, overreaction, like, ah! It seems like he would, you know, switch between like, slimy, sleazeball kind of guy to like, all of a sudden, like, ah!
Right.
I would say that for that reason alone, like, the first movie I like better because all the actors in that one are super solid. They're really solid actors, and I think he's a weak spot in this one.
Yeah, in some cases, I guess. I mean, I don't know. In some I think in the earlier stuff, he's better. But like you said, it's tough. Just like with Newt, with the kid, it's tough when they have to play like excited, over the top, like actiony. In the other one, it's much more subdued performances up until. Then they're dead, basically. There's never, like, they get away and then things are crazy. I mean, except for you get, what's her name? Cartwright or whatever, the other female.
That's all
losing it, and stuff. But yeah, she's definitely, you know, doing a good performance there. I think you're right. It's a testament to being a different kind of movie, and like you said, yeah. Definitely you would cast somebody other than Paul Reiser, I would think, for that role in most circumstances. But yeah, I mean, what do you think, Matt? Did Paul Reiser bug you about it?
I thought he was awesome. I thought it used to be weird seeing him in this role, being usually such a funny guy. But I thought he played it really well, and I appreciated all the sweat they put on his upper lip.
This
rat sweat son of a bitch.
Yep.
He did have a lot of upper lip sweat.
And they were gonna do it until he got kind of saved by the insanity.
Yeah.
Which
is Ripley
interesting.
Ripley stopped him from killing him.
Yeah, Ripley was like, no, we have to.
Yeah, that's right. She was gonna stop Hicks from doing it.
We have to do this, something.
Yeah.
They needed him.
We don't know what it was.
Reason.
He didn't figure it out in the writing. He's like, and things have to start happening.
And alien crashes in the.
Burp, 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 burp. I do like that Michael Biehn seems to act the same in every single movie he's ever in, but he always plays the same character in every single movie he's ever in, so...
He was crazy in The Abyss, though.
Yeah, that's true.
I haven't seen The Abyss.
And oh!
He's a good one.
Oh!
It's a really good movie.
It's so good.
He's much more, he's way more, like,
he got to flex
insane
in that movie.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And he plays...
He's not just that monotone voice.
No. I mean, at the beginning, maybe, for a bit.
Yeah,
a little bit. But then he starts to lose it. He's got a mustache. So it's basically that character with a mustache.
Yeah.
Tombstone.
Basically. Yeah, Tombstone is awesome. Yeah.
Right.
That's what I kept thinking.
Yeah.
I want your blood.
Yeah, he was a bad guy in Tombstone, right? Wasn't he the bad guy in Tombstone?
Yeah, he was the right-hand man.
Yeah,
but he was still that monotone. He's always like super.
He's very
monotone.
Cool. Yeah, he's very cool. I mean, basically, this Hicks and Kyle Reese are pretty much
I
the
like
same kind of
character.
I like
how my monotone becomes cool to him. Like.
Yeah. No, it fits.
The way he talks like this.
It fits. It's a cool character that fit in those two roles in Kyle Reese in Terminator and in Hicks and Aliens. It fits. It's like that's the one that doesn't go crazy or isn't overblown. And just does it right.
But he could have some inflections in his voice. Is what I'm saying.
Yeah, there could be a little bit
it's
there.
It's like Keanu Reeves with The Matrix. He needed someone who was the one and who could zen out and could clear their mind so they got someone with nothing in his mind.
I don't think comparing Michael Biehn to Keanu Reeves is helping him.
I think at the same time... You know, you guys pointed out little things he did. I mean, maybe he didn't change his, you know, vocal inflection too much, but things he did with the child and with Ripley and
good
just
husband material.
The way little things he did to show that like there was more to him than just being this like half asleep, too cool for school guy. Like, you know, he could identify when something was a real problem and he can, you know, get everyone else to calm down.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was really one of those cases where you could see like this is the kind of guy that should have been promoted higher up. On the chain, but hadn't because he wasn't a big play politics kind of guy. He's the quiet guy in the background
kind of
that you want on your side when shit goes down because he's not going to lose it and he's not going to all of a sudden be inept. He's going to just, okay, we have to do this right now. Let's do that. And then, you know, it's like who you want direct. It's like me when I direct a project. I basically just channel Hicks from Aliens. And I'm like, okay, everybody, come here. You know, we're going to have to set that perimeter up there. And then
get more monotone.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know. He's probably Canadian or something like that.
But yeah, we'd hear in a boot in there.
He gets excited at the end, though, after they lose Newt. We got to go. Now! And he's breathing very heavily.
That's true.
And
did they put sweat on him too?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
intense.
He's in shape. He didn't get sweat.
Oh.
That's true. He was the biggest one there.
Big. And he had the heart with the lock.
With the lock.
Thanks to the Blu-ray, we can appreciate the locked up heart.
First time I ever noticed that watching it this time. I did not appreciate that. I love all their little decals, though, all their little customizations, but that was just goofy.
Yeah.
Like something
yeah,
glued
what was that
on.
About, like?
And after the acid hits him...
It wasn't glued
on,
it was, like, screwed. There was, like, a lock thing. You know, one of those, like, little latches that goes like this,
okay,
and it was screwed on, and the lock was, like, locked.
Painted heart.
Dorky.
Painted heart behind it, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah,
it was
very,
probably supposed
like,
to hint at some kind of backstory for the guy being, like, you know,
like,
unattached.
I have a hard exterior, but I'm soft on the inside.
Soft-spoken or something.
Yeah,
like
I don't
that.
Know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would give it a 4 out of 5. Aliens. It's good to watch with a group of people on Friday once every couple of years or so for me. It's a fun watch. Good excitement. It hits you right where you need it to be.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Any other ratings?
Go around the circle. I want to hear Matt's rating. It's probably 5.
Mm-hmm.
It's 5.
Yeah.
I think this one's like a 3 out of 5. Alien 1, 5 out of 5.
That's fine.
It's it's fine that you don't think she's hot because that way I have a better chance with her.
Because movies are like women.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I can't remember what I gave Aliens. Or Alien.
Well, what do you give this? What difference
does
it make?
It does make a difference.
I think I gave it a 4 out of 5.
I think I gave it a 4 out of 5 too, so I give this a 3.5 out of 5.
Okay, yeah. Good.
Give it a 13 out of 20.
Always got to be somebody special.
I didn't see the movie, so there you
what
go.
What do you mean you didn't see the movie?
I didn't see any locks or any hearts, so your experience is completely different from mine. That's a whole level of subtext that I don't want to get into.
Yeah. 7.5 or whatever. 6.5.
Out of 5?
Out of 10, which would be a 3.25. 3.25. Hey, Joshua Nelson gives it 3.25 stars. Like it's Star Search or something.
From my memory, I will give it a 4.
Okay.
Does that make you happy?
4.
Claire gives it a 4. That's a good solid rating, people. Yeah. I mean, from what I would say is a veritable cross section of America and Americana. Various appreciations and takes and stuff from the world here. We all give it a pretty passable good rating. So if you haven't seen Aliens, then you probably shouldn't be listening to podcasts.
The music.
Horner.
James Horner.
And some original stuff, just to tie it in. It's a little, I think at the beginning and at the end, they do a little callback to the original one.
Mm-hmm.
But the Horner stuff is good action
stuff.
Oh, man,
stuff. He nailed
it. It's not overwrought
either. It matches everything on
screen
so well.
And like you talked about at the end with the fight, there is no music. So it's like, they're smart about not making the music
that.
Be so overwrought and like telegraphing every single damn thing. They do a few like, you know, sound cue, like jump moments. But, I mean, that's fine. That's acceptable.
Yeah.
But it's not just, like, every single scene they're telling you how to feel because of the music.
Mm-hmm.
They're just kind of laying a nice background for the most part, which I appreciate because so many movies these days just have to do that. They just have to just, okay, in this scene you need to feel sad because the kid's mom just died, so let's do the kid's mom and your sad music now.
Randy Newman.
Uh-huh.
You said... The kid's mom died.
That's sad.
Hey, you play the music you want at your funeral. I'll play the music I want at my funeral.
I usually think you've got a friend in me, but okay.
Right. Anyway, that was a good one. Thanks, guys.